Almost Live from Nigel, it's time for this week's Hard Man Newspapers podcast.
Hello, I'm Andy Dorimple, and welcome to this week's Hard Man Newspapers podcast, Almost Live from Nigel. This week, coronavirus cheer, homelessness during the pandemic, and a Manxy in Memphis. To try and give you a taster of this and some of the other news that's been hitting the headlines in our print titles, and of course online at iamtoday.co.im, I'm joined by News Hounds, Sam Turton.
Hello!
And Jess Ward.
Hello.
Now, after giving it the old big up last week about, oh, we've had a tremendous run of all four of us together, one of us, big clue, the one that hasn't spoken yet, isn't here this week, are they?
No, letting the team down.
Yeah. Katie Judith Chalmers Kitchener has taken some leave, even though she can't leave the island. So she won't be in today's podcast, sadly. That means we won't have any Yessa training at the end of this week's episode, which is quite sad, because last week we did learnt about the Bee Gees, didn't we?
It was really good.
Yeah.
I love her sessions, actually.
Yeah, her Yessa training is really good. Sam, you're waving your arms, but I think you're just dancing, aren't you?
Yeah, I was doing like a Bee Gees dance.
Is there any news about the... Obviously, this week we've heard about the promenade and how they're going to try and advance the works. Was there any news about where the Bee Gees statue is going to go? Will we have the statue maybe a bit earlier than we thought?
Unfortunately, the statue is a Douglas Council vanity project. Oh. So, being no sort of announcement on that yet. We don't know anything about Douglas Council, actually. It's weird. They've sort of gone underground. They're meant to be announcing the new leader and mayor and stuff this week. All the local authorities are electing their chairmen. Nothing. We haven't heard from them.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you say underground, are they in a bunker somewhere, like the church or war rooms in London?
Yeah, if you go... Little known fact, actually, if you go into the town hall, there's a downstairs basement, there's a lot of archives,
right,
which David Kitchener has repurposed into the war rooms. He's got maps. He's got maps on the wall, and he moves little bin men around and wagons to show where all his material is.
And the front is currently by the Eastern Amenity site at the moment. Is it the main front?
Yeah, it's no such thing as quiet on that Western front, I'll tell you. And it's quite remarkable. I mean, Raina Chattel, who's an institution in Douglas in her own right, has actually taken up the post of Vera Lynn. So it's none of this is going out.
Right, we've got lots to talk about this week. Starting with something that you guys probably be enjoying as you're listening to this week's podcast. It's VE Day on Friday, Jess, tomorrow, today, whatever day you're listening to the podcast. There's loads of stuff planned around the island, isn't it? I saw that we did a story in the Examiner this week. The Legion are trying to do it. There's going to be a virtual parade and all sorts of stuff like that. Jess, you're doing a story about some of the care homes doing something, aren't they?
Yeah, so I've been speaking to Castle View, which is in Peel, and they're having certain kind of placards and memories dotted around their garden in relation to VE Day, and the residents are going to go around and look at them and just kind of like discuss it. Also, Hector Duff, who we know as a war hero, you've named your son after him. He's going to be laying a wreath actually on Friday at 11 o'clock in the morning at Onken Memorial. So that's just near the co-op.
Yeah.
So he's going to be doing that.
Fantastic. Now, it's been another strange week in lockdown. We're on week 7 now, Sam. Is it 6 or 7? How many days have we been locked down now?
I don't know.
It was second last week of March, wasn't it, we locked down? And now we're
it's been weird for me because I've just been coming into the office. So, like, the only difference that I've noticed is that the roads are a bit busier in the morning, and that's about it. Like, it's been a weird sort of lockdown for me. Everyone else has been... I think the biggest difference is I've been going to court instead of going to planning authority meetings, and I miss the planning authority dearly because nowhere else do you get to sit through 10 minutes of discussions about bat migration.
I'm sure they'd be missing you as well, Sam. But Jess, we're going to start off with a story that actually made me cry this week. I think it's obviously emotions are heightened at the moment anyway. But yes, the story you wrote, and I think it was online on Monday, wasn't it?
Yeah.
A fantastic story about Sharon Burgess. She was the island's first COVID-19 patient that was admitted to Nobles Hospital. I think it was 25th of March, something like that, she went into?
It was ages ago.
She's been in ICU for a large part of that period since, but on Monday she was released onto Ward 12 to an amazing video, or a round of applause, which was captured on video, which you've shared on our website and stuff. But yeah, it's a fantastic story, and a bit of light at the end of a tunnel, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've all been waiting for that moment, and to actually see it is a bit surreal, I guess. But yeah, so it's Sharon Burgess, and she's from Douglas. She went into hospital, like you said, on March 25th. And then 2 days later, she was admitted into ICU, and she was fighting off not only COVID, but also pneumonia as well. And she was put on a ventilator, and she was sedated. So it was very serious. I managed to find out that she had been admitted to the hospital, and I got in touch with her family, and they said they didn't want to talk about it just because, you know, the future was so uncertain, and that's totally understandable. And then I just got a message on Monday from the daughter saying, I know I couldn't speak to you at the time, but actually my mum is being taken out of ICU today, and we're getting a video of the NHS staff giving her applause when she's being wheeled out into Ward 12. And we'd love to give you the video and for you to kind of use that, because you wanted the story first, and we'd love for people to find out through Isle of Man newspapers. So I was really I guess touched as well, because she kind of went out of her way to let us know. But yeah, she was just really lovely. The daughter was lovely. And then just finding out more about Miss Burgess and how, you know, she came out. She's obviously very thankful towards the NHS staff, but she's very confused. She's lost a lot of time, obviously being sedated and being in that situation. So, yeah, we've not been able to speak to her just yet, but that's fine. She needs to recover and kind of process it all. And she's been given mental health care at the moment by the staff. And the family are just so appreciative of what the staff have done, and just can't thank them enough. And I spoke to them, and yeah, she's got four grandkids who've been missing her like mad, because of course they haven't been able to see her that whole time. And not being able to see your loved one for that amount of time, and them being in such a horrible situation, I just can't even imagine what that would have been like for the family. So yeah, the video was really touching. I had a good cry myself, actually. And yeah, it's just nice, isn't it, being able to see that. And I feel like the whole community was just there in the moment watching that video. And yeah.
Seeing this, Facebook now has a care emoji or reaction now you can do.
Yeah, the one hugging the heart.
Yeah, but there was tons of comments, you know, obviously, you know, in support of Sharon, and also obviously the staff. Which actually leads me onto a story I wrote for the Indie this week. I don't know if you guys saw this. One of the local beer craft shop, Beer Bottle Monkey, is got in partnership with a few of its the companies that it does wholesale trade with, so the likes of the Foraging Vintners, Compton Vaults, Secret Pizza Company, and they've launched the Buy a Pint for a Blue Light campaign. So you can go onto Bottle Monkey's website, donate £5, and then that £5 will be set up as a virtual tab in the venue of your choice. So then when all this is over, if you're a blue light card holder, so an emergency service worker, you can go into one of those pubs and show your card, and you can get a free drink of your choice. It doesn't have to be alcoholic.
Whatever
you want. But I just thought, yeah, there's times when you like that, when you see the guys and all their PPE dealing with these things, you think, oh, I wish I could buy them a pint. Well, now you can. Just get onto bottlemonkey.im and have a look at that now. I'm sure I'm going to definitely buy a pint or two, I think, because I think they more than deserve it.
Yeah, the emotions that they must be going through. I mean, we had a question from one of the journalists during the press briefing about, you know, mental health with our healthcare workers. They're having to deal with what's happening on the front line and put in those hardworking hours, some being overnight as well. And yeah, it's just not really something that I've not really thought about so much, I guess. You kind of expect them just to get on with it and like be these heroes that don't have those emotions, but of course they do.
Well, you can read more about those, both those stories in this week's Manx Independent, which is available in obviously newsagents at the moment and retailers like Tesco and ShopRite, but also you can get it digitally at iomtoday.co.im. Click on the digital editions tab and you can get it for the just a pound, which is 10p cheaper than the print, the actual paper copy. Right, Sam, next story, we look at how coronavirus has been affecting the homeless and the fact that they've actually been housed, I want to say, in a couple of hotels around the island during this crisis, haven't they?
Yeah, so at the start of this, you've seen it in England as well, that one of the sort of issues that was being picked up on was the whole point, one of the big parts of emergency powers was people had to remain in their own home or their permanent place of residence, which for a lot of people, they didn't have, you know, they had to. So what the government did was they set up this scheme where the benefit system is paying for people to be housed in a couple of hotels in the island, which is the Seven Express and Apple House. And it's working out as £192 a week, for which they're getting free meals as well. And it's sort of one of them where if they can pay for it, they do. If they don't, then it comes out of benefits. And same with the housing allowance we've done. And it still means that they've got a bit of money as well at the side. So if they want to go to the shops and buy an examiner, for example, then they can do. So what it's all, essentially, it's led to the thing of now where do we go from here as well? Because if you know, they identified without much trouble, really, 21 people who needed somewhere to live. And there are, of course, others that they won't have picked up on. And it's in terms of actual like couch surfing more, because the island doesn't necessarily have a street homelessness problem. It's got like couch surfing and people living in cars. And what this has sort of brought to the fore is how we resolve this going forward. You know, it's always that argument, if you can do something in an emergency, you can do it in normal times. So the interesting debate in Timwood about it, actually, where they've said about Laurie Hooper, who's Ramsey MHK for Liberal Vanning Party, and he said that what the scheme has showed is that the current approach to housing on the island is not fit for purpose, which is opening up sort of more ideas in terms of, you know, what a house is being built for. And he said himself, you know, it's somewhat appalling to have to rely on making emergency powers to make sure people can have a roof over their heads. So I think really the bigger thing of this is not necessarily that people are being charged to stay in these hotels, and it's good that they've got somewhere to stay. It's more a case of how do we respond at the end of this crisis to find a home for people, essentially.
Well, which is something that Minister Ashford has said that they're going to look at it, hasn't he, after the pandemic has sort of died down a bit.
Yeah, he has, and you know I expect him to stand that. You know, he has often been shown to be a man of his word, and I hope he really does follow through on this one, because it's sort of, you know, I mean, we're something ridiculous. Like, we're in the top 10 easily, sort of, aren't we, like most wealthy nations in the world. And I know that our GDP is skewed somewhat because of the way things work. But you still have the situation where we shouldn't have homeless people on the island, man.
So I don't think it should, you know, the fact that it's taken a pandemic to get to the stage where they're thinking about that a bit more seriously is ridiculous.
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, you look at England, Jeremy Corbyn was a lunatic for suggesting this sort of stuff in December. And now you get to March, April, and it's like everybody has suddenly realised that it's a societal issue. And I think really, you know, it's a case of the laws that were created and also the concerns about people who don't have somewhere to stay spreading a virus themselves by carrying it and taking it. And also a lot of people, without making generalisations, people who have poorer health and perhaps addictions are more susceptible to this sort of virus. Then it's good that they found a way to respond to it, but it's a case of what do we do afterwards? And yeah, it's I think there's more to this necessarily than what's actually in this story, if you get what I mean.
Obviously, it's going to be when we come out the other side of this pandemic. Obviously, a lot of budgets are going to be under strain, aren't they? And it could be easy to sort of gloss over this again, couldn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
But again, you know, like I said, you know, the health and social care minister, and the important part of that is social care. This is a social issue, societal issue, and as society, you have to, you know, you have to, it's not that, I think it's the old thing of it's not a handout, it's a hand up. And if you can help people get into a house, you can help them get a bank account, you can help them get a job, and then eventually that money returns to the government via taxes. It's a simple system. The solution here has been hotels in the short term, but there's definitely a longer term thing that we can do here. And you know, if we can spend it's that old thing, if you can spend £192 a week now, put them in a hotel and give them three meals a day. Why couldn't we spend that 6 months ago and put them somewhere? You know, it's...
Yeah. And then that also, you know, the fact that these people have a stable kind of home and, you know, the impact that will have on their mental health and the way that they kind of contribute to the community, that's going to have a bigger impact on the whole system, I guess.
A very interesting subject, and as it was, you covered it well in the Examiner this week, Sam. So if people want to have a look at more at that, that was in the Examiner on page 7, which, as I said, you can get as a digital copy if you can't get out to the shops at iontoday.co.im and look on the digital editions tab at the top of the page. Right, this week's sports story, I don't know if you saw it, Sam, I know you're a football fan, involves Liam Doyle, who plays soccer in the, America, in the second tier in America, so that's USL, United Soccer League, which is below the MLS. He plays for a team called Memphis, who are owned, or part-owned, by former Everton Wonder, Tim Howard, who also has actually come out of retirement to play this season for Memphis. But sadly, as we all know, the season was cut down in its prime because of the coronavirus pandemic. And I think they've only actually played one game this season. But Liam is in Memphis with his wife and newborn baby. Disco Dave Norton trawled through his little black book of football contacts and did a great interview with him using the wonders of Facebook, I think. So there's that was in the Alaman Examiner this week. You find out how Liam's dealing with lockdown, how he's trying to keep fit, how he's dealing with being a new dad, how he's dealing with being on the other side of the world from his family and all sorts of stuff like that. And obviously, how he's dealing with playing with Tim Howard, absolute legend. As an Everton fan, I'm very jealous. He's also, Sam, do you remember Jose Baxter? He used to play for Everton?
Yes, I do. Yeah, he was quite good. He was a wonder kid on FIFA at one point.
He was. Well, he's also playing at Memphis as well. So he's playing with Liam at the moment as well. So.
To be honest with you, I saw Liam Doyle locked down in Memphis, and I assumed he was some sort of Elvis tribute.
Yeah, well, he's playing in Music City. So, yeah. Before he played for Memphis, he played for Nashville. So he seems to be going around the musical hall.
So he's gone a little bit country, and now he's gone a little bit rock and roll.
You'll have to go rap next, won't you? Maybe a move to LA.
Detroit.
Yeah, Detroit. That'd be funny.
The Manx Eminem.
But if you want to learn more about Liam and how he's getting on in America, please do pick up or try and find a copy of this week's Alan Examiner. Right, Sam, this week in history, for the second week, it's got to be V-Day again, hasn't it? And you've gone for an Isle of Man Daily Times from May 8th, 1945, V-Day itself. It's a great page again. Last week was brilliant. Which publication was it last week?
I think it was the Examiner. It was just before the end of the war, and it was detailing Manxmen who had come home or been injured in the later days of the war.
But this one's actually about victory itself, isn't it? I'll let you take it away because some of the headlines are brilliant.
Yeah. You've got German capitulation accepted by Big Three. I'll come back to that Big Three thing in a minute, actually. But you have like Master Race utterly vanquished, and you know you have this whole thing about like how we've done it. It's great. What I love is the fact that they talk about the Big Three and then completely remove any mention of the USSR throughout the rest of it.
Nice.
They still want to look, didn't they?
Well, yeah. I mean, the Alman Daily Times was ahead of the curve. They were fighting the Cold War before it even got going.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, actually, because you look at it. I mean, the Big Three were General Eisenhower, Field Marshal Montgomery, and Field Commander Zhukov, who was credited, actually, as the man who did win the war. In terms of the first one to Berlin was the race sort of thing. This is fantastic front page because you've got a picture of His Majesty, King George VI, you've got Churchill, you've got Eisenhower, you've got Monty, who's referred to as our own Monty, which is quite interesting.
Yeah.
There'll be an edition that we come to in a few weeks where he was actually given the Freeman status of Douglas.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh,
Cavendish has got that also as well, hasn't he? I think maybe Norman Wisdom. There's only a very few set of people that have got that. That'd be a good pub question.
The Bee Gees have got it.
Pardon?
The Bee Gees have got it as well.
A lot of people doing quizzes at the moment on Zoom, aren't they? Maybe a list of who are the free men of Douglas, as it were.
Yeah. I like it. I just have one thing. My favourite headline on the whole page is this one, which is Union Jack hoisted in Dublin.
And then I saw that. It was very funny.
Right at the bottom, it says, how long has the war lasted? And they've got it broken down into days. It was 2,075 days. So it was 5 years, 8 calendar months, and 6 days.
Wow.
They've gone into a lot of detail. I think it's really interesting how they have, like, so much international news for a Manx paper.
Yeah, but you probably, I don't know... would obviously have to ask the Oracle, John Watson, but I don't know how much access there would have been to UK national papers during the war. You know, would they still have been looking over? Obviously, there was no internet. There was primitive radio and press were probably the main things. And it's about getting that message out, isn't it? And, you know, this was... I would have loved to see how many people would have bought this paper back in the day, because I bet you for such a historic event like that, there would have been, the circulation figures must have been unbelievable.
Collector's edition.
I find quite interesting. Actually, you see the thing where it says ceasefire tomorrow night. So obviously May 8th is declared as VE Day, but the ceasefire didn't actually take place till the following day.
That's mad.
But I mean, you get that in wars. I mean, if you say the First World War, there was the, of course, the war ended on the 11th sort of thing. But if you actually look at the history of it, I think it was at the time was Southern Rhodesia. They were still fighting for like 2 weeks afterwards because they never got the orders.
I suppose
it's not unknown for this to happen, where they announce a day and then the war sort of rolls on for another couple of days elsewhere because they haven't communicated.
Yeah, that makes sense.
What I was going to say to you, this obviously is an amazing front page. It's historic for all the reasons we've detailed so far. But if you want to see the actual physical copy of it, we'll be carrying it in the Examiner next week with a bit of commentary. As we have been all of our This Week in History for the last few weeks, all of them are every week appear in the Examiner now. So it's hopefully getting people's interest. So that will be in the Alaman Examiner next Tuesday, if you want to see what the front page of the Alaman Daily Times was like in Tuesday, May 8th, 1945, VE Day itself. Right, there's no Yesser training at this point, because obviously Katie's sunning herself in Douglas somewhere, but we'll look ahead to what we've got coming up next week. Obviously, we had our editorial meeting this morning. Obviously, still quite a lot happening, isn't there, Jess?
Yeah, I mean, I'm constantly busy. I'm working away at the Courier at the moment. So I've got an update on Bob Corkish, who is the resident down in Southlands. He's been walking laps around, just raising lots and lots of money. I think he's up to £21,000 or just over. So impressive. What else have I got up to? Oh, I've just written up about students who are creating bravery certificates, so kids who are as young as 3 or maybe even younger, I'm not sure, who are being swabbed for them to be for those samples to be tested for coronavirus. It's just something to lift their spirits, because it's probably quite traumatic for them, actually. So they've been creating little certificates, bravery awards for them, which is quite nice. Otherwise, I've got another piece about an artist who has... she's painting free portraits of island NHS workers, which is really cool. So she's painting one of a nurse who has been working in the COVID ward, and she's been painting a portrait of a midwife. So that's, I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I've seen the pictures you've put of them in the system to go on the page. They look really good. They're really nice pictures.
She is fantastic. Yeah, she's friend of mine, actually, but like, yeah, she's just so incredible with her work and so thoughtful as well. You can tell there's like a lot of meaning behind her stuff that she does. But so it's part of,
I presume she asked her subjects to send in pictures of herself, of themselves, did she? Or
because otherwise, I don't think there would be any other way to do it, really. But it's all part a bit of a global, I don't know what you call it, but that's it. So it was started by an artist in Oxford, and he just said, right, first NHS worker to get in touch with me, I'll do a free portrait for them. And then he's encouraged other artists to get behind it.
So I've seen this. There's a Banksy painting appeared on a hospital somewhere in England. I saw that on Twitter.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Southampton?
Southampton, yeah.
So that's, I take it, Jess, your story will be in the Examiner, will it? With the pictures of the portraits.
That one, I'm not too sure. I think it might be in the Courier. But otherwise, for the Examiner, I have not even looked at that just yet. Just chipping away with the Courier stuff.
Sam, have you got much on your plate at the moment?
Oh, loads. I mean, I've got a story to lift the village and indeed a nation. We're getting our water wheel back.
Oh, Groudon.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Little Isabella is returning to Groudon Glen. The planning application's going in. Of course, there's a mining company in Laxey doing the work. It's brilliant. We're getting our water wheel back.
This story is equivalent to Adrian's, our chief reporter's story of the Ramsey Pier. So I feel like you've really followed this through. Like,
I'm calling it Mogga. We're going to make Onken great again.
When was it not great, though, Sam?
When they took the water wheel away.
So
this is like the opposite to NIMBYism. I want it in my backyard.
When can we expect this tremendous moment to happen, though? I'm guessing it's not going to be anytime soon.
No, but it'll come. Don't worry. I don't know if we'll be able to have fireworks. I don't know if we'll be able to have fireworks because, like, it's in a wooded area. So yeah. That's probably not a good idea. No. But we'll have something. I imagine like a street party with the Red Arrows doing an overpass, that sort of stuff.
Maybe even for, obviously, later in the year, we've got VJ Day, haven't we? Victory over Japan. And I think that's in August, isn't it? So maybe for August. If we keep our fingers crossed, the wheel could be turning again by then.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Anything
what about
else?
What about you, Andy?
The sports, well, we're still trying our best to fill the sports pages. There's next week, we've got some more features sort of type stuff. I'm trying desperately to rack my brain of what we talked about this morning. Obviously, a lot of sports are at this, like netball and rugby are at the dilemma now. It looks like maybe it's going to be July, August before, maybe even longer before contact sport can be allowed again. So when the pandemic struck, a lot of them paused their campaigns. So it's whether they now decide that's it, we're going to finish it, and then how they do that. Obviously, we've discussed in the past how football have done it and things like that. So it's about catching up with them sports. But equally, we've seen in the last week, golf have gone back. You can play on your own, or you can play with members, only another member of your household. Again, it's all purely recreational, no competition, stuff like that. But I know Crown Green Bowls, angling are back. Crown Green Bowls are looking to go back and other stuff like that. So it's looking about maybe how sports starts to reopen again after the extremeness of the extreme measures of the lockdown. Another story I'm actually looking at the moment, which is for news, is how the Isle of Man's breweries have coped during this pandemic. Obviously, they will have had been left with a load of beer, but nowhere to sell it. So what they've done with that, how they've kept up production during the lockdown, what the sort of looking, the timescales they're looking forward to, maybe pubs reopening and stuff like that. So I'm working on that. Well, probably in one of next week's papers. But yeah, that's about it. Sam, you got anything else to add? Obviously, with the water wheel is big news, but I'm sure there's other things you've been working on.
There's tons. I mean, you know, not to break the fourth wall here, but of course we are recording on Thursday with the E-Day being tomorrow. We've got a piece in the Courier actually from Gary Roberts about what policing has been like during this. And as we were saying, just as we come in, we've realised that TT Senior Race Day caused no races, so they're cancelling the bank holiday.
This is absolutely unbelievable. I think there'll be riots in the streets because of this. Obviously,
socially distance riots. Yeah, exactly. That'll be the benefit. Is if we all take, instead of using bats, if we all take snooker cues, we'll know how we can stay apart from each other.
Yeah.
Well, riots.
We're very well choreographed.
Suggesting it.
Riots. Not that we're trying to incite social unrest. This
backtrack.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with me. I only suggested it.
Throw it in reverse. Right, if you do want to get in touch throughout the week, please do at IOM News Podcast on Instagram and indeed on Twitter. And I'm sure Grace will be putting up some tremendous artwork. Last week's Bee Gees artwork for our podcast was pretty impressive. I thought, you know,
so I
might grow my hair out and show my hairy chest off more often, having looked at why I looked like the Bee Gees. I think I need a medallion as well.
Yes.
Yeah, but yeah, that was a tremendous effort from Grace last week. But so please do look on our Instagram and if you want to see our amazing artwork she does every week. As I did say before, do log on to iomtoday.co.im to find out all the digital editions of our newspapers this week, all three. Obviously, the Courier will be there tomorrow, Friday, when that's... Emma's probably going to shout at us for saying that. It's there. It's there. It's omnipresent, the Courier. Just go and look at it. If you do want to send a postcard, Sam's still at Ironman Newspapers Podcast so please, HQ, so please do send that to Ironman Newspapers Podcast, Ironman Newspapers, European House, Peel Road, Douglas, IM1 5ED. Right, I think that's about it for this week. Hopefully we'll be Zooming again this time next week. Katie back, do we think?
Who knows?
But two shrugs. Well, Katie, if you're listening, you have been missed, and we'll hopefully see you next week.
Bye for now.